It's living hell.
This is what real hope looks like. This is the word that those hopeless people need to hear. This is the word that 3,000 people that try to commit suicide today, the 3,000 that will try to commit tomorrow, 3,000 that will try to commit on Monday, this is the word that they need to hear, is that there is hope.
It's real superpower. It's hope. There's hope. It needs hope.
Welcome to Victims and Villains. This is the show where we talk nerd, we talk hope, and we speak nothing else. I am your host, Captain Nostalgia, and welcome to part two of our coverage on the great Philadelphia Comic-Con. And we're actually going to start it off by giving you guys, introducing you guys to two gentlemen that we never normally showcase, but these guys were just such cool dudes that we had to take a little bit of time out. So without further ado, I introduce you to the mystery guests.
So, welcome to Pin Squad. We specialize in making limited edition collectible pins. We work with a lot of different artists from all around the world to present their art. Some of them are really well known. Some of them are not known just yet to the world, but we're here to help you discover them. You can check out our lanyards, our t-shirts, our tapestries, and of course, if anybody's looking to make a custom design and make any kind of product that they're looking for, we can help you out with that. We do it for different bands, different artists, and people all over the place. So we hope you check us out, pinsquad.com, Facebook, Instagram, and we love you guys. Thank you so much.
Line 24 Art. First time at Philly, the great Philadelphia Comic Con. I got some big stuff coming up. It's been very good. So hope to check me out at Line 24 on IG. Also on Facebook, Line 24 Art. And I'm also have my own website, dphcreate.com. It's at Line 24 also. So check me out.
Cool. All right, so over the next couple of interviews, you guys are going to be hearing a lot about Source Point Press, which is a great and up-and-coming independent comic book publishing company. And if you guys want to hear a little bit about one of their titles, you guys can go to our YouTube channel and check out the review of The Rejected. And without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, this is Source Point Press.
Tell me a little bit about the
Itself. Well, I 2001, I hit some major writer's block, and I had no idea what to write, and I was kind of in a funk, and I was at a bar that played different classic movies on the screen. There was no sound, there was really Wizard of Oz, Robert Flynn, and one day they had Star Wars on there, and at the end of the movie, when the Death Star blows up, I just got this thought in my mind that, like, what if there was a company that hired crews to go out and salvage valuable junk in space. So to get myself out of the writer's block, anybody who's a writer or knows the way to get yourself out of writer's block is to just write anything. So what I started to do is write down what different jobs would be on the ship. Obviously you'd have a captain, pilot, demo guy or two, tech guys to figure out whether what was valuable and what wasn't valuable. So I ended up having about 9 different characters. And I named them, I started giving them backstory, and that's actually how I got the process of writing back. And after I had those 9 characters, I got the dumb idea to do it as a comic book, so I thought, well, I can't have 9 characters, it's way too many to develop. So I gave the ship artificial intelligence and cut the crew in half to 4, where I have Captain Bill Romick, the pilot Tegan Ray, tech guy Brigby, and the big demo guy Sierra. And then I just kind of started playing with how each person's personality would be and how they would play against each other, because at the time I had a job that I hated. So I really wanted to put that aspect into the comedy. We already have Rebels, there's already Explorers, you know, there's already, like, you know, with Firefly, your A-team in space that'll take on any job. I wanted it to really be co-workers. We all can relate with, you know, hating our jobs and not really enjoying the people we work with. So I really wanted to expand that aspect for some of it being a work environment. And there is a boss. And, there are office romances and there are characters who can't stand each other. But they have to work together to make ends meet at the end of the day. And it's a dangerous galaxy, so they have to work together to survive. So it just really started putting a lot of layers onto the characters and into the story. So I luckily found an artist that wanted to work on it, and it took about 10 years for us to do Volume 1. But in that time, I really learned the ins and outs of making comics. In that time, I was able to network with a lot of other artists and other writers. I self-published it. I went out to the conventions, and I ran into Source Point Press, and I liked what they were doing. They liked what I was doing, and we both kind of had the same idea of turning Salvagers into, you know, a big universe, an expanding universe. As I was saying, Salvagers 1 and 2, Volume 1 and 2 is finished. We're working on Volume 3 right now. The first issue is finished, and we're going to put it out as a Kickstarter pre-sale this week. But I'm also working with other writers and artists to do their own one-shots of Salvagers that will link to the main story. They'll be their own characters, their own crew, but they'll link to the main characters and the original crew. So it's going to be fun. My goal, my dream is to kind of make my own Star Wars universe, my own Star Trek universe. So you know, every little bit counts, and doing these podcasts and being out at cons and making new fans always is just puts us in the right direction.
You talked about starting out kind of breaking that writer's block, doing starting out with 9 characters. That's common theme: 9 characters, a big team, trying to get out 4 characters. How did you kind of decide which characters you wanted to keep on characters?
Well, I mean, it wasn't that hard of a decision because I did have like 9, so 9 characters. I had like 4 demo guys. One was a girl, the tech guys. There was actually 2 of them, so I wanted them to kind of be nerdy guys playing against each other constantly. So cutting the demo guys, it was almost like I molded different characters into new characters. So, you know, originally the pilot was a male. And they were all human. None of them are aliens. And now I have 1 human, 3 aliens. So instead of having a male pilot, I took one of the female demo people and I kind of molded her into the pilot. The 2 tech guys playing against each other, I kind of made one of the tech guys, I turned him and warped him in with another demo guy, that now the demo guy and the tech guy butt heads instead of the 2 tech guys butt heads. So again, and that was one of the things that I think, because I hit writer's block, I wasn't in a rush. I didn't want to rush it, and I wanted to make sure that the characters were going to pop. I knew that if this comic was going to work, it wasn't going to be the story that people were going to be following. It was going to be the characters that they were going to fall in love with. And at the end of each volume, people were going to be like, I want to keep following these characters. And that was what's going to drive this into a popular comic. To say like which ones did I want to keep, it was more like when I decided to go with 4, I actually only kept the 1 captain, and then I started morphing different characters into 1 character that was a totally different character that took, you know, personalities from others.
Interesting one for you guys are talking about
So I think when I worked with David Haynes, who does Rotten Tail for Source Point Press, and the artist Stan Yak, who did the artwork on the Box Masters, my idea for doing the one shot was, now that my stories are going into a trade paperback and they're getting, you know, up there in price, people that don't know what Salvagers is might be more hesitant to pay $18 for a graphic novel that they've never heard of. So my idea was, if I could get other people to do one-shots that incorporated the entire essence of Salvagers, then maybe somebody would say, all right, you know what, I'll take a chance on this $4 one-shot, and if I like it, then I would hopefully come back to get the trade paperback. So what I really wanted to keep in those one-shots was getting to the grittiness of what this Salvagers is. You know, it's not this beautiful landscape of spaceships. It's more like an outlaw. You know, it's more like a wild west. And these characters, they're not, they're down on their luck. They have a job of cleaning up garbage in space. So I really wanted to keep it that, you know, that Sanford and Son-ness, trying to make ends meet, you know, compromising different things to make those ends meet. So, and David Hayes is an amazing writer, so he's read everything that I was doing, and I always bring my stuff to him and I get, you know, his feedback on it. So he kind of picked, he hit the ground running. He already knew what he needed to do to bring out that, that Salvagers, you know, dirty Salvagers feel. So he was perfect for the job. So when I do these Kickstarters now, I really like to do these Kickstarters as recent. You know, you're not going to have to pay $15 for a comic book. I do free domestic shipping, so it's more to get this comic into people's hands. It's a way to distribute it. The first issue of Volume 3 is probably 90% completed. Probably by a couple weeks from now, it'll be done. So what I do with these Kickstarters, though, is I like to add exclusive rewards. Each one of these Kickstarters has different reward tiers where you'll be able to back it and get everything. If you're new to the series, you'll be able to get Volumes 1, 2, and the beginning of 3. If you already have Volume 1, you'll be able to get Volume 2 and the beginning of 3. You'll be able to just get Issue 3. You'll also be able to get t-shirts. I do plush dolls. We do original artwork. There's a reward tier where you can be a cast member in Jasper Skull and Tavern, which is the funnier side, the webcomic, which is the funnier side of Salvagers. And we'll put you in the strip as a cameo appearance at the tavern. So I like to do it. I like to interact with the fans. I like to give them extra stuff. We plan on hitting stretch goals, unlocking stretch goals that give you stuff. You won't be able to get anywhere but this Kickstarter. So it's a collector's item.
You can find me online at sourcepointpress.com.
Jasper Starlight Tavern. If you go to sourcebookpress.com and you go to webcomics, you'll see Jasper Starlight Tavern. You can click on there. You can read all the scripts for free online. Southward, if you go to the bookstore, you can order a book off of the bookstore online. But you can also go into your stores. The most important thing for us is going into your local comic shop, asking them what they have for Source Book Press, and pre-ordering our books for them. Because that really, really helps us, small press. It makes store owners see us, and the more and more people buy our books in stores, the more and more shoppers will buy our books without anybody actually ordering it. Because they'll see that there is a super quality. So get out there, look at comic shops, and ask them, say,
so that was Mr. Bob Sally, and if you guys want to support the Salvagers Kickstarter, make sure that you guys click the link in the descriptions below. But next up, I am sitting down with Mr. Frank Gogol.
Tell us a little bit about it.
All right, Grief is a bunch of short stories. It started off sort of as a portfolio, and like, slowly sort of seeking out of stages of the grief process. Real weighty content, so it shows itself in my work. But I was really trying to write some real stories,
so tell me a little bit about how the process for this book kind of got started. Like you were talking about, you start out, you know, wanting to write superhero books, wanting to write, you know, these monster stories, and it kind of morphed into this story about the grieving process. I feel like that is something that everyone can relate to, something that everyone knows. It's a, like you're talking about, weighty topic. So kind of tell me how it slowly started to form.
Sure. So my storytelling is very steep in a couple of ways. One of them is he tells stories that are about people first and monsters second. And then the monsters are about the sort of manifestation of a problem that you catch physically and obviously feel seen. So I started out wanting to write about people first. So my first short story, which is the last one that's in the bunch, is called Embrace. It's about the relationship between the father and the son, and how they live day to day, and how they learn to love one another. And so I started writing human stories, and then I wanted to, I'm a regular comic book, and I want to write some of that. So I wrote my original Power Rangers, Captain Marvel, and Bullseye, and some zombies. Yeah, it's what I tried to walk the line between fun stories and comedy. To me, that telling stories is like fun comedy. So it's Grief is sort of a misnomer for the book. These are really interesting stories. They were created to as I was writing this, emerged from it. Like I said, it's a first story I wrote, and I haven't written it. I haven't even written it in years. So I also moved really quick. So this is some of my earliest work. This book was me developing my style. It's still evolving. That's sort of where it is.
So, talking about, you know, the grieving process, it's one of the heaviest things that I feel like, you know, we go through as humans. You know, we lose someone to, you know, cancer or a car accident or suicide. It's one of the heaviest things to kind of deal with. So why make that be the center?
Checking out my
sci-fi book. I wish that I could say that it was a choice. I wrote about 6 short stories. They're all supposed to be little 5-page portfolio pieces. So I could, you know, maybe reach out to somebody at IDW and make a pearl and say, hey, this is my writing. Do you think this would be a short piece? And then, as I was writing, I'm right here with my sound off. So
if you want to, you can pick yourself up and look at it.
These two are better if you check. This is angle. This is
I'm not a huge comic.
And then so for the last three or four, I brought
bro. We do have a pro section of stories.
Some of them are very much about that. Some of them are very much about that. But generally, that's where I went. Like I said, I wanted to tell humor stories. And I asked myself, what's the universal humor experience? Lost a loved one, an important relationship, a awesome job, or something that in your life, in your life, you know, one way you're going there, so you want to make a little bit of this. It's something that you're going to contact. It's super real, it's super real. Like monsters, it's monsters. It's a drama, it's a couple of those things. So it's sort of, it became this thing, and I tried to make this thing more constantly sort of this way.
So you also tackle one of the, before we started recording, one of the things you talked about too is also, the transgender kind of coming out of the church as well. And we try and feature content on here that appeals to, you know, every demographic, but specifically the LGBT community, so there's such a high suicide rate. What made you kind of want to tackle that journey and that story?
A couple things. The story is called Different, and the people who read it, it's a way to change the meaning of the story. But I started with this idea of having this story. This person who is maybe queer, not really interested in having and some queer standing in the world, kind of like having some of the press groups and black people in the 60s. As I was going on, like, I really felt that I needed to sort of flag me, like, stakes of me out and really talking. And transgender is something that it means a lot to me. Being gay is not a wider case, but it's more accepted. Used to be transgender, so that the newest oppressed group that has a spotlight right now, they have a lot of disengagement. And it was just something that it speaks to me as a topic, so I wanted to talk about this thing. I didn't feel comfortable telling that story because I am not a person. I'm just a guy. I no one is telling me so. So I teamed up with a transgender comic story who she writes trans girl in the store. And I worked with her. She read my story. She gave me feedback. So that way I wasn't telling someone else's story. I wasn't making it about me. And that was more authentic. Like, the first year, using makeup from a black guy, and by the end of the story, the makeup becomes the empowerment that she's putting it on to the beautiful instead of the content. So, my first draft had my character putting on this bright red lipstick, and a little bit, the makeup was a little over the top. And that's the first impression. I didn't have insight into, like, what it's, I've never been a woman, I've never worn makeup, so, like, I didn't have that insight. So, I worked with Kylie, and Kylie said, yeah, put it down, make it real. You know? People want to look cool, they don't want to, they don't necessarily want to notice, they don't want to stand out, they just want to be comfortable. So, working with Kylie, and there's a couple other stories in the collection where I work with creators or people I know who are of a certain sense or a particular to make sure that this was also something that the voice is important. And I think that's part of why the book was necessary.
I feel like, too, you know, one of the people that we have right now here, Sasha, who's, you know, really opened our eyes to kind of see the issues that are involved in this community. I think that, you know, you don't have a lot of answers on that. I really respect people who are taking that extra step. It's really good. We also, too, at the same time, we also believe in starting the conversation, kind of conversation with building. So we've been asking every creator we've interviewed so far for Philadelphia Comic Con is, there seems to be this stigma around depression and mental health. Firefly McSanders. You know, from someone that just put out a comic about these heavier topics, to try and break the stigma around it. Why do you think that we're seeing that?
There's introduction, story,
but also it's talking
about the role of the ship and how they interact with each other. If I did my job right as a writer, you're going to love the character has some emotion. And we have Volume 2, picks up right at the end of Volume 1. This one is a little bit of a rush, relating it to the 10 months. So you can get the first one up to $10, and then we throw in a short shot of the visit. Shot of the visit is like when you investigate. So you got the son of Great Bigfoot, Roswell Alien, and Emmerich Chaplin, who's been around since the 17th century. And again, the way I like to write things is that you get to know what's going on as you read it. So kind of storytelling is telling them about characters, learn who they are, their connection. If you like sci-fi, this would be a serious read. For 10 bucks, you can take a shot. If you really want to dive in, you can get Volume 2 for 15.
And then just in general,
such excitement inside of
me. Or whatever reason, it's really in America.
Congratulations on the successful Kickstarter. And this is just going to follow this dude. What do you got anything next for you?
I've got a couple pitches put together.
Good.
I'm trying to
check out Family Graves. It's like the incredible classic Hollywood monster
But I keep
family. Dad's a werewolf. The daughter's a siren. The monster. We're doing a package deal, all four stories, complete unit. You buy all four of them, fuck off, $14.
What that does, and a lot of them. We've got another one that doesn't have a title yet, but it's Silence of the Lambs. It's taken sort of the elevator dish, but it's really about what the relationship between fathers and sons is, what is the responsibility of the father, how much control father has over their son. It's wild that I come up with these very simple, elevated, weighty topics. Sometimes I try not to get complicated. Like I said, I grew up on Buffy. I grew up on Grand Lake Stanley, which is 14 years ago. But years and years, and I don't know that I'm ever going to not be able to see it. But I think the content is meaningful.
Thank you so much for giving a voice to make a difference.
Thank you. Thank you for the deal you guys did. I mean, your niche in the podcast world is underrepresented. I guess it's not even here. It's affected me on a cellular level. I obviously feel so anyway. It's got to get them something to be talking about. There's a little bit of a good start that's off for 2,000.
I was singing
crazy about it. I'm positive that's my life since that.
Devin, so I need $15 back. Right? They're buying.
Thank you.
All right.
Buying,
please go check out this book.
15 and 10. So $25 out of $40. $15.
Finally, for Source Point Press, we have Mr. David Hayes.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Doing good. I love Philly. It's a lot of fun.
I'm not from Philly, so.
Well, that's where we're at.
Yeah, true. So you got a whole connoisseur of different things here at your table.
Yeah.
You have comic books, books, movies, and you even have a movie in the works right now. So.
Right.
Let's jump in and just kind of tell me how we got started in this business.
A long time ago. It's like everything, a little labor of love sort of thing. And slowly grew. I started in Chicago doing weird theater, late night splatter theater for some different companies. And it kind of evolved into doing a couple of movie parts here and there. And I've always been sort of a writer by trade. I teach English and I teach communications at a couple different universities. So that's really what I do, stock and trade. So the writing, the books and the comics, I've naturally sprung from that.
So, what came first, the books or the comics?
I'm not going to remember. I think the short stories, of course, I think came first. So, I was in a couple of anthologies there. Then, short comic stories. My first one I ever moved was in the Starship Troopers backup story.
Levi, is Garrett over there?
Garrett? We're looking for Garrett, too.
Yeah.
These things are always so much fun. And, so that's kind of where it started, and moved into a short comic story and the Starship Troopers book from Marcosia, and then it kind of went hand in hand from there. I got into movies and wrote a few of those, different plays, and eventually moved up to novels, graphic novels, and now a whole miniseries.
It's very rare that we kind of get someone on our show that deals with, doing, they either do books or they do comics. It's never really, books, comics, and film. Tell me kind of what's the challenge between moving between the mediums?
Story's a story, and how to tell a story has gone into different permutations. When you're doing a comic book, you're really, the world's your oyster. You have absolutely, zero budget to worry about. You can do absolutely anything, but you have to tell that in static images. No one runs through a room, just a picture of someone running, and then a picture of where they end up. So that's kind of a little bit of a difference there. And in a novel or a short story, you can get as descriptive as you want or as little as you want. You can really get the mood of the story going based solely on how you approach it. And a film is something completely different. Kind of like a comic, except times a million of how collaborative it is. If you write a script, that's not a movie. It's a script. You need 133 other people to finally make that into a product. That's more of a collective effort. So I would say it's very lonely in the books and short stories, getting less lonely as we move through comics, because you need artists as well, and then finally a great big group of fun people to make a film.
Do you have a preference when it comes to kind of doing a specific storytelling?
It depends on the story, but I love comics. Always have. Always will. I mean, I started making movies to get into comics. I did the Kevin Smith movie.
All right. Fair. So, tell us a little bit about some of these comics, big, you know, since we're on the topic of comics.
Sure.
We have the Rot here, Rot Tail as well.
Right.
The Seance Room looks like over here as well. This could just be on your table.
That's one of Ben's.
Okay, well, then let's talk about the Rot here and Rot Tail.
Sure. The Rot is a 3-issue miniseries, and it kind of fits in with your podcast. Because the character of the Rot is a man who can control his own cancer, and he can project it out on the people. Wants to do the right thing, heaven's after and hell's after, we've seen this in cases of play. It was kind of born from family tragedies, and I wanted to find not a positive use for cancer, but what if someone was forced to use it? We look at it as it's a horrible, awful thing, and it takes so many lives, but someone, we're faced with the moral and ethical issues of what do we do if making these choices if we can just get rid of it if we want. And it's really, it's more of a morality play in that sense. So it's a 3-issue miniseries. It's painted by Sean Seale. A lot of fun stuff in there. So it's a genre piece. So, it isn't all morbid and depressing. There is a lot of action, a lot of suspense. And then it's a really different tone as Rotten Tail. It's a giant mutant beast running. He goes on a killing spree. Horror comedy proportions. It's a graphic novel. We just shot the film last year. It was shot in Arizona, starring Corey Nemec from Bucket List, Kangaroos, SG-1, Supernatural. Dominic Swain's in it, Billy McNamara, and that's going to be coming out this October from Paramount.
Yeah, David. This guy is so popular. Hi, Ben Goldsmith from Source Web Quite Awesome. This guy is so popular, ladies and gentlemen, we had to interrupt this interview just to get him to sign one of his comics for Rob.
It happens. That's the thing about doing these things at Comic-Con.
We're out still.
Anything happens.
Anything does happen. Anything and everything. So, that's in a nutshell. Source Point Press is the publisher that I work with most of the time. And we've got lots of cool titles, all kinds of different people. Like Ben Goldsmith, we just heard from. Blustery guy from Boston. Very loud people. Very loud people from Boston.
So what's it kind of like seeing a, talk about Rotten Tail, the film comes out this October.
Right.
What's it like to see a product of yours kind of start from head to paid to final product and a comic book and then kind of evolve into a film?
It's interesting. This is the first time I've ever run into taking someone from graphic novel to a movie. And like I said before, collaborativeness of it. It just got a bigger and bigger team. There isn't just me. And it was me and the artist Kurt Belcher. And it was me and the artist Kurt Belcher, the director, Brian Spiegel. And then the lighting guy. And then the design team came in, designed the sets. And then our makeup and effects team were hired to the Caribbean. So, they designed our Rotten Tail Bunny for the screen. And that was great too to see that whole thing come to life. So this it got very big, very fast. And it's really kind of I'm still taking this all in. I've seen a cut of the movie. I'm incredibly pleased with it. So, it's a bit overwhelming, but I've done lots of movies, but nothing that was this close to me for such a long time.
So, I have to do this too. So, some of our fans are into early 2000s music.
Yep.
And you have a Jimmy World DVD.
Yeah.
So, tell us a little bit about why that's
over here. So, A, it's a joke. Everyone always asks about it. But if anyone's familiar with the videos in the early 2000s, the Jimmy World, the one called The Middle. with a bunch of pretty people in the running room, and one hairy fat guy in the room. And I'm the hairy fat guy in the room. So I did the video. I didn't know who they were at the time. But they were some weird local band in Arizona, and they were. But yeah, I ended up on the man show when I was there, the spring breaks, the pop-up videos. And I have a great big picture in Playgirl, me in my underwear, one of the sexiest music videos of the year.
How does an honor like that feel?
I don't know. I gotta wait through yards and yards of penis to get to me, so I don't know how I feel about that.
So one thing that that we've been asking every creator is our show deals a lot with mental health,
right.
Raising awareness, raising stigma. But the fact that there even is a stigma, why do you feel like that is for the person? Why is it so uncomfortable for you to talk about depression?
I can give you a clinical answer. The other half of my life, I'm a forensic psychologist. In my opinion, and some studies, there's a stigma with depression because it's simply misunderstood. And we live in a uniquely Western society where we're supposed to be self-sufficient. You know, when you were growing up and I was growing up as boys, we were told that, our worth in life is to go out there by ourselves, kill a dragon, bring it back home, and you are defined by what you do and what you're able to do. And depression is a debilitating disease. And since it is a disease, you can't control it. Without, of course. If people don't view it as a disease, self-perpetuating because you're less of a person and you can't go out and go. So it needs to suit me to be Western, and by Western I mean Europe and East and West, sort of idea and concept of how what a person should be. The notion that we can't see it, we can't hear it, it's not like a broken leg, it's not like a physical manifestation, but it just doesn't exist. And that's really where the stigma comes from. And we're going to take a lot of mind change. Systemically, really disregarded mental health for so many years, cut funding for so many years, on the federal, state, and all kinds of levels, that it's just becoming a bigger and bigger problem. There are some cool things out there, though. There's shows like your show that would never have existed. NBA podcasts for Rodgers never happened, which is really cool. And there is a lot of people that are actually stepping up and accepting the drug depression and are making it known. And they're not afraid to actually talk about that because of platforms like media and platforms like podcasts. So that's a big change.
So people listening to this right now, they're like, man, I want to check out The Rock, I want to check out Rock right. Hill.
You can go to searchpointpress.com. You can go to davidchayes.com. That's HAYES. You can go to Amazon. Everything's up on Amazon for our books and our movies. If you're going to a local comic shop, ask them to go to Previews Magazine for Diamond and older Source Point Press titles. We're all over. BarnesandNoble.com. If you have Barnes & Noble in your town, go in there and ask for a book. They get it. They already have it.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, man. My pleasure. And stay awesome.
So that is actually going to do it for Source Point Press being on our show for this episode. We'll probably hopefully feature them in future episodes to come. But next up, before we dive into the world of independent comics and cosplay, just a brief word from our sponsor.
I'm here now with Cherry, Kaz, what's going on?
Hi guys, everything's going great. I'm awake and I'm here for the morning.
So you got a whole plethora of stuff out here. You got Rey, Black Widow, Scarlet Witch, Assassin's Creed. You're dressed as
Infinity War Black Widow.
And you got Negan behind you. Tell me, let's start this off. What is your favorite cosplay?
Oh my gosh, it's really hard to decide, but I want to say it's probably Negan. It's a lot of fun just running around, being him, being crazy and all that.
So, what is it about the art of cosplay that kind of drew you in wanting to develop these characters?
So my entire life, I've always been kind of, I guess, bored with everything. I want to be able to bring these characters to life and become these characters, whether it be just to make the costume or even have fun with everyone else. So, yeah, it's just being able to become the characters I've always looked up to.
So when you're kind of processing and putting together these characters, what is the process for choosing how these characters are going to be embodied? Like, I guess the to simplify the question, like, how do you decide on who you want to be?
I've always loved, there's a lot of characters out there that have such amazing designs. Everyone has such amazing character art to it, but a lot of the times I try to choose characters I can relate to. If I can have some kind of relationship or connection to the character, I'm more motivated to create it versus someone that I don't really fit the personality of.
You ever challenge yourself, like, kind of like, kind of just, you want to be somebody that's kind of out of your norm, kind of out of your comfort zone?
Definitely. It's fun to just acting at that point, just becoming an actor, becoming a specific kind of character. I do that a lot with Wonder Woman. She has a lot of bravery and courageousness that I'm just like on a nail, and I want to get out there and become that. So when building Wonder Woman, I had that mindset. I have to play this role, and that was a big challenge for me.
So it looks like from here, from just like looking at your table, you have even stars out here. You definitely embody different fandoms. But do you ever find yourself, you know, wanting to embrace one, like, a particular fandom over another?
I've been cosplaying for 10 years now, and the fandoms have changed in this past decade. I definitely find myself switching fandoms and becoming more centric to one. Right now, I'm really, like, home base is the comic fandom. I'm really embodied with these comic book characters over the anime characters I did 10 years ago with the video game characters. So definitely the comic fandom is my home right now.
So something I've been asking every guest that we've had on our show doing the Philadelphia Comic Con is our show, we try and create conversations, create, and truly try and challenge stigma that surrounds mental health and depression in particular, and suicide as well. Why do you think that depression is so... Why do you think that there's a stigma around a lot of the stuff that we cover?
Stigma?
Stigma, like, uncomfortable, like people don't want to talk about it.
I believe it's because it's hard to touch upon the subject without feeling like I can't connect to you in that way. It's hard to hear someone talk to me about depression and anxiety when I have both, when I feel like I can't relate to them. And I think that's where, like, this barrier of uncomfortableness, that stigma comes from, is just how do we bridge the gap for that conversation. So
you had talked about, before we had started recording, you talked about, you know, using your voice as a cosplayer to kind of speak out on these things and just, you know, speak out on the issue, period. Do you ever find that, like, there's particular cosplay in particular that you feel more embodied to, you know, challenge these subjects?
Absolutely. So on top of just going to conventions like this and being a guest, I do a lot of volunteer work. I volunteer at children's hospitals, birthday parties, different events. And I always bring out Black Widow, no matter what version of the character, just as long as I'm Black Widow or Wonder Woman. Both of those, I feel like, are the strongest female leads we have in the generation today, that I could use that character to reach out to people and give my message, give my advocacy, and just connect with them. So definitely Wonder Woman and Black Widow.
Cool. So people are interested in seeing more of you or hearing more of you, where can they follow your adventures online?
So what was the question?
Where can they follow you online?
Thank you, guys. I really hope you do keep track of all my journey and everything that I do today. It would be amazing.
That was Miss Cherry Cos, and thank you for sitting. Next up originally was Katie Ko, who is a fantastic and awesome cosplayer, but the audio for it, something happened in the final product. We just can't release it. You can't make out any of the words of our interview. All you can hear is the background noise. So we do apologize about that. We'll still have the links for her in the descriptions below. Next up is That Jay Cosplay.
All right, so tell us a little bit about how you kind of got started doing cosplay.
All right, so way back in the olden days, I was a marketer and promoter. I promoted some awesome video games and stuff at New York Comic Con back in 2009, and I didn't cosplay back then, but I've been a comic book fan since before kids had cell phones in the dark times. And I just loved reading comics and playing video games, and eventually I started seeing cosplayers and said, I'm having a good time, I want to try that. How hard can it be? Narrator, it was hard. So I started hand sewing all my stuff, and eventually I got into doing marketing and promoting in costume as well as behind the scenes writing copy and like promoting events. And I just started getting more and more requests to be a certain character or do something at a con, and it just kind of snowballs from there. So by starting out just wanting to have fun, you can grow into something more. But if you start out going, I want to be famous, that doesn't always work. You kind of have to really enjoy what you're doing and get something more out of it than just fame or income or whatever kind of glory you think it's going to bring you. Because to be honest, the market is super clogged. People are always asking, how can I get into cosplay? Like, first of all, how can you get into something you'll like? Something that's fun for you. I think that's the more important thing than anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're dressed here as Phoenix.
Yeah.
This is not Dark Phoenix. Phoenix.
I am dressed as White Phoenix of the Crown. It's her final iteration. If you're a big X-Men fan, you'll remember the issue she's appeared in. It's been really fun. There's another White Phoenix walking around, so we got a fun picture together, the two of us. And there's also an Emma Frost, who is a big X-Men fan. So when I got to talk to her, it was really fun to relive all the sagas and the wonky continuity. And people really don't understand the characters sometimes because they've only seen a cartoon or the X-Men movies we don't talk about because they didn't really match up with our idea of what X-Men should be. But at the end of the day, we're all fans having a good time, so it's really fun to cosplay your own nostalgia and childhood.
So when you're deciding how to do costumes and characters to embrace, what is your thought process, your creative process, kind of going into each character?
Me personally, if I consume a media and there's a character in it that either like reminds me of myself in personality or body type or like skin tone or just anything about them, it can be anything. I could look nothing like the character, but I like them. I'm going to cosplay them. And I don't even think of, how am I going to do this? With cosplay, you learn as you go. You kind of develop new skills every time you try something different. And it's like being a video game. I leveled up. I added some more stuff to my skill tree. I got a couple more points in spandex. And just as long as the character's something that I enjoy or I feel empathetic with, I'll cosplay them.
Nice. So you actually are featured here on the A-Force during the cosplay cover. What's it like to see your image as cosplay to She-Hulk all across the globe?
It's a really fun story, actually. I've been cosplaying She-Hulk for many years. I went from doing a body stocking to doing full body paint to like remaking my leotard as I got better in costuming. And I've actually received a lot of flack for that particular costume before it became a cover image for Marvel. Someone actually said on Facebook, why does that She-Hulk have Negroid features? He used a racist eugenics term to describe me, and I said, because she's black. And the person who had shared my photo deleted the comments so that the incident didn't get any further. But it just goes to show that no matter how good your costume is, if someone is prejudiced, it's never about the work you put in. It's always about their personal hang-up, and you shouldn't take it personally or take it to heart. You should just do what you're doing and have a good time anyway, because years later, that costume was good enough for Marvel to say, we like your She-Hulk, we want to represent her on A-Force number one, and I got to do the shoot. It's amazing that there are people who I'll never meet who have a book with me on the cover in their house. I've been stopped in elevators and asked if that was me and had to sign autographs, and it's just been an amazing experience, and I'm really happy to be a part of Marvel history. And to cosplay a character that I love that much, to be part of a book that I actually enjoyed reading as a fan before I got to be on the cover of it, a cover that's featured in a video game, Marvel Puzzle Quest, you can collect the character for a limited time. It's just, it's awesome, and it really made me feel just so powerful and strong to get to be a Marvel character. They cast someone as She-Hulk who is disabled and black and queer, and all of those things add up to a person who is worthy to be on that cover. It's definitely a good self-esteem booster, because sometimes cosplay can be really stressful and you are becoming a brand. You're becoming something people are constantly looking at and analyzing and judging, and it can be hard on your psyche. You can kind of be stressed out, but you got to remember that you're doing this not just for yourself or people who look up to you, and you know, for your little cousins and sisters and people to say. You can be discouraged, you can have your feelings hurt, but at the end of the day, if you're doing what makes you happy, you can find your own joy, even in the darkest times.
It's beautiful. So, your booth out here talks about, you know, being the hub of
all things gay at Comic-Cons.
Oh, I'll explain what that means.
Yeah, I was glad to ask that.
I am also, on top of being a cosplay guest at like 20 cons a year, I'm one of the co-directors for LGBTHQ. I've always been about advocacy and speaking up for things that are important to you. And it's always cool to find other people who also believe in that. So together, we're creating programming at conventions that talk about diversity in media, that encourage others to vote their stories. Because people forget that, yeah, there's a big two of comic books, there's Marvel and DC, there's also hundreds and hundreds of independent comic book creators out there making their own heroes, making their own characters, and we have to support them. We have to say, hey, I like this book. I want to read a book that's about superheroes from Jersey doing their own thing, written by someone who also is from there. I want to read about trans superheroes, Latina superheroes, like all different backgrounds. I want to read about characters that represent me, and you can find that not just in the comic book store, but at Artist Alley at Comic-Con. So we try to find independent creators of comics and video games to promote and make panels for them, as well as encouraging the community to support themselves, support each other. That's what we do at LGBTHQ.
So how did you kind of get involved in doing that?
I was at FlameCon the very first year in Brooklyn. It's the first LGBT Comic-Con in New York City. And I met some other creators there who were really interested in getting their work out there. And together we built LGBTHQ. The first founder and co-director is Matthew Levine. And he and Ryan Dietrich and I have like created some panels for different conventions. We've done AwesomeCon, we've done New York Comic-Con, we did an LGBT Expo in New York. Basically, just like-minded people who want to make a difference in their community, who want to give a marketing and promotion boost to companies that are independent and are trying to create diverse media for everybody to consume, as well as provide a safe space at cons. Like, if you feel like you're being bullied, if you see our logo, if you see my name, you know you can go there and someone will be able to talk to you and help you feel less stressed out. You can go somewhere where you won't be misgendered, no one will like treat you differently for being a person with a disability or a person who is a person of color or like anything like that. It's all about making a safe space and making the whole con better, I feel, because people can think that they're, you know, cosplay's not consent and cons are for everyone, but that's just talk unless you actually back it up with creating that space for other people.
So someone's listening to this right now and they're on the fence about whether or not to come out and embrace that. What would you say to them?
I want to say that you are valid, whether you come out or you're in the closet, whether you keep your nerdy stuff or your queer stuff or whatever it is that makes you different than what people think you should be. You are valid, whether you can talk about healthy or not. Sometimes it's literally not safe to be out. There are people who live in countries where they can be killed legally for being queer. And people forget how serious that is. Even in this country, it's not safe to be who you are. So if you want to talk about it online anonymously, you can go to lgbthq.info and you can email us. If you want to make friends in the community, but without risking your own life, we're here for you. And it just makes, it breaks our hearts because we give out lanyards at our booth and there's some people who are like, I want one, but I can't wear anything that says LGBT on it because I would be bullied or I would kick out of my house. So we're lighthearted at Comic-Con, but we also want to be people know that we're here for you guys for the serious stuff too. It's not just about superheroes and capes, it's also about caring about other people and doing our best to support them.
So where can people find you online?
I am That J Justice, THATJAYJUSTICE on Instagram, Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, YouTube. I'm going to be on Twitch in a few minutes. Yep.
I thank you so much for not only talking, but also embracing the LGBT culture. I don't know too much about it, so like we talked about before, but it is a voice that needs to be heard, and I thank you for embracing it.
I mean, you're thanking me for being myself, so it's a weird thing to say you're welcome or thank you for listening or whatever, but I think it's really important to embrace everything that you are as a fan because you're helping other people also feel safe by showing them that, hey, I'm like you, and I'm out here doing my thing, and you can do the thing, too. We're going to hold hands and walk through this field together.
Nice.
We are actually going to be wrapping up our show here in just two more interviews. First up being coming back to the heart of independent comics. This is Burning Spears Comics. You guys can hear about the Wild Card Chronicles and the world that this comic book is creating. And be sure to check out our YouTube channel for a review when it hits later this summer. Without further ado, Burning Comics LLC.
What's going on, man?
Hey, how you doing, man? I'm good. I'm glad to be here. First of all, it's a blessing.
True story, true story. So, tell us a little bit about the comic book, man.
Okay. We wanted to create a story, a unique story that fans can interact with. All right? It's hard to find the hero within if we're always looking to others for heroes. But when you see the best parts of yourself and then see it inside of a comic book, that motivates you to be a better service to your community and to the people around you. The Wildcard Chronicles picks up after World War III, which 70% of the war is fought in cyberspace, 30% on the battlefield. So after this, the whole world changes. A lot of politics, a lot of anger, a lot of betrayal, a lot of mistrust, all make for great storytelling.
True, and I love that, you know, when we were talking before, you were pitching me the comic, you got really into detail, but, like, I love that you left a little bit for the readers.
Yes, you know what? That's the thing I struggle with, because I'm so excited about the project. I can just sit here and told you the whole story. You're like, man, I told you the plot and everything. So, yeah, we want to give you enough to come on board with us and follow this journey from beginning to end, because our heroes are unique in that sense, that we just don't throw you a hero out there and then tell the backstory later. We want you to grow with these characters, learn the emotional mind state of these characters, and see how they go from ordinary to legendary heroes.
So what was kind of the creative process for wanting to create these characters, not just to throw a hero out there, but to really build these characters up and, you know, the reader experience triumph with these characters?
Okay. What started us on this journey was I first started these adventures in the United States Marine Corps. I traveled, I saw a lot, did a lot. Then once I got out of the Marine Corps, I became a biker, president of a bike club, and then that just took off from there. I said, man, all these wacky adventures we live, and somebody has to write about this, and nobody will ever know. So I think the fans will enjoy the backstory more of the real characters. We have a lot of real life characters in the story. So the readers will love the fact that the heroes come from amongst the people. So these are people they know, peers, colleagues, and they get to read the stories within the mythos of the comics.
I love that. I feel like that's one thing about comics that's always really bothered me, is that you get to meet these heroes, but you don't really know what forged them into heroes, what the circumstances were diving into these characters. You're just kind of like, oh, this guy's got a cool backstory, this guy's got a cool costume. So you talked a little bit about this taking place in World War III, and everyone thinks that it was, you know, when you hear World War III, it's like, oh, it's apocalyptic. So what was it like for you as a creator to kind of break that mold and say, I want to embrace a different version of World War III?
Well, we get the, like you said, we get the apocalyptic theme way too much. I think we don't give ourselves credit as human beings. We can be civilized, okay? And we just underestimate the fact that we're not fighting each other all the time. So why should it all end in an apocalypse? You know, it has to be like all smart people died during the apocalypse or something. So I wanted them to see that there's life after that. Because when we think World War III, first thing we say, oh, this is the end. It's the end of the world. No, it's not. In fact, it's just the beginning of a new era.
So you talk about the really, you know, experiencing this journey with these characters and their journey as well. So you have to have a big vision for this. If you had to prepare to give a scope for how this world is building, what would you say?
You're going to be surprised. I mean, when we got into it, we were just bikers, so a lot of people think that it's just about bikes. When they'll see there's so many spin-offs to this universe. I mean, we've created a whole fictional universe around the storyline. So it kind of shows you what the world could be if everybody used common sense. So, you know, in this world, politicians, popular figures, they're held accountable for their actions. Just can't do things that hurt others and they're not the consequences. So you see what it's like to watch countries and nations actually answer to the people instead of the government.
I like it. So you guys are one issue deep right now, and I would imagine that this is building for something huge.
Yes.
How big is the and where do you guys going to go? Just what are you guys building to now? Does it evolve into, you know, this, like, all these exploration of, like, different portions of your universe?
Yes. In fact, you'll see it during the growing process. Like I said, our saying is ordinary and legendary. And you will watch these young street racers, these kids, go from bike racing to navigating politics to becoming superheroes themselves, leaders of the Deadly Seven, the Dark Part of the Master Series. When issue one first opens up, we give you a glimpse right in the first couple of pages of what was behind us and what's to come, because it starts off in 2029 in the future, and Nuri is obviously about to fight a great battle, one that seems it will cost him his life. So he's having a Jesus moment, a Garden of Gethsemane moment, where it's like, okay, everything has been leading to this. And then right as you start to go into that, it flashes back. It starts as young Nuri, and you see how they got to that point. And then it finishes at the end of the issue with him going into battle, which is a cliffhanger. So you don't see, you just know he's on his way to a fight. And then issue two picks up, and you're seeing how the story develops. How these characters became who they are.
I love that way of, like, storytelling.
And me too. I wanted it to grip the people. I wanted them to be able to relate to it. So, like, there are a lot of things in there. Like, when we do some of our moon designs, like you see, like, on that poster right there, see how it's a real moon? Because our theme is, you know, art imitates life. Art imitates real life. So we wanted to make the feel of the comic book dark, gritty, and real so that our fans could relate to it.
So one thing that we have really been talking about, and I love the art, by the way.
Thank you.
I think the art's one of the biggest things that drew me to the table in the first place. I love the concept that you guys are building here. But one of the things that our show does as we embrace also is we embrace, you know, breaking stigmas and around depression and creating conversation about hope for those that are struggling with suicide. And one of the biggest things that I've been trying to ask creators like yourself that we've been interviewing for this is, why do you think that there is a stigma around depression and suicide to begin with?
Really big topics. Suicide, PTSD. In fact, things brought up, because we touch on these things. We deal with autism. We'll be surprised to spit people on autism.
Nice.
I don't want to give too much away, but people will see autistic humans in a completely different light than what we've looked at. You want to see them do great things, and when you see the great things that they do, you're like, they weren't autistic. We just didn't understand. They've been talking to us all along. And one thing we dive into that will help with suicide prevention and PTSD is initial spinoff, which is Ghost Racers. That covers the first Chronicle book. Right? Like I said, everything we do has a story, a meaning behind it. And what happens is the Ghost Racers covers the story of Nuri Montes' father doing his military time. And basically, his dad is part of he leads a special forces unit called the Ghost Racers, who use only tribal weaponry to do battle. Edge weapons, that's it. So picture taking the ancient tribal ways from, like, African tribes, Hawaiian tribes, and then bringing it up to date with high-tech razor weapons. And you get, like, five different versions of the premise. So that is where it all really starts. And her dad and my dad were both Vietnam vets. And my dad passed in 2004. Okay, but he's in the story. Her dad passed in August. So I had to speed up production because he was terminally ill with cancer. And I needed him to see his legacy and eat before he passed. So I got it done. He saw it before he passed. So even though they're gone, their stories will be told and they'll live on forever.
So where can people find you guys online, and where can people follow the unfolding of this massive universe?
You can follow us at burningspiritcomics.com. That's Burning Spirit Comics with an X. BurningSpiritComics.com. It will lead you to all the other avenues to reach us. We're also on Facebook. You can get our Facebook page, Off-Guard Chronicles. We're also on Instagram, Burning Spirit LLC. And just come check us out, man, because it's the fans who make it all work, because the characters in the story come from among the fans.
So we got one more interview for you guys, but before we bring them on, the reason that we push the content that we do, if you are new to this show, someone that you know or someone that you support was featured in this, thank you for checking us out. But the heart of why we do what we do is to let you guys know that there is hope. If you or someone you know is struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression, please reach out. Suicide is currently the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. There are 123 suicides that take place right here in our own backyard each and every day. And for every successful one of those suicides, 25 more are being attempted. That is 3,075 suicides attempted right here on our own soil each and every day. And when you scale back internationally, there are 800,000 successful suicides taking place all around the globe. That's one death roughly every 40 seconds. So if you or someone you know is struggling, please reach out. You guys can reach out to us on any of our social media. Links are in the description below for this episode. You guys can also call the Suicide Lifeline 1-800-273-8255 or also text anonymously to 741-741. But that is going to do it for us. We are leaving you guys this week with an interview with Mr. Blair Webb and Mr. Blair Smith. Mr. Blair Webb is an awesome guy. If you guys have not checked him out, have not checked out any of his series, please go do it. He's been on our show previously before with Pop Comiganza. Great guy, and we cannot wait to have him back on the show. So that is going to do it. Till next time, remember, keep talking nerd, talking hope, and speaking nothing else. We'll see you guys soon.
What's going on, man?
Hey, how you doing, man? I'm good. I'm glad to be here. First of all, it's a blessing.
True story. So, tell us a little bit about the comic book, man.
Okay. We wanted to create a story, a unique story that fans can interact with. All right? It's hard to find the hero within if we're always looking to others for heroes. But when you see the best parts of yourself and then see it inside of the comic book, that motivates you to be a better service to your community and to the people around you. Wildcard Chronicles picks up after World War III, which 70% of the war is fought in cyberspace, 30% on the battlefield. So after this, the whole world changes. A lot of politics, a lot of anger, a lot of betrayal, a lot of mistrust, all make for great storytelling.
True, and I love that, you know, when we were talking before, you were pitching me the comic, you got really into detail, but like, I love that you left a little bit for the readers.
Yes. You know what? That's the thing I struggle with. Because I'm so excited about the project. I can just sit here and told you the whole story. You're like, man, I told you the plot and everything. So, yeah, we want to give you enough to come on board with us and follow this journey from beginning to end. Because our heroes are unique in that sense. That we just don't throw you a hero out there and then tell the backstory later. We want you to grow with these characters, learn the emotional mind state of these characters, and see how they go from ordinary to legendary heroes.
So what was kind of the creative process for wanting to create these characters, not just to throw a hero out there, but to really build these characters up and, you know, the reader experience triumph with these characters?
Okay. What started us on this journey was, I first started these adventures in the United States Marine Corps. So I traveled, I saw a lot, did a lot. Then once I got out of the Marine Corps, I became a biker, president of a bike club, and then that just took off from there. I said, man, all these wacky adventures we live, man, somebody has to write about this, but nobody will ever know. So I think the fans will enjoy the backstory more of the real characters. We have a lot of real life characters in the story. So the readers will love the fact that the heroes come from amongst the people. So these are people they know, peers, colleagues, and they get to read the stories within the mythos of the comics.
I love that. I feel like that's one thing about comics that's always really bothered me, is that you get to meet these heroes, but you don't know what forged them into heroes, what the circumstances were. diving into these characters, you're just kind of like, oh, this guy's got a cool backstory, this guy's got a cool costume. So you talked a little bit about this taking place in World War III, and everyone thinks that it was, you know, when you hear World War III, it's like, oh, it's apocalyptic. So what was it like for you as a creator to kind of break that mold and say, I want to embrace a different version of World War III?
Well, we get the, like you said, we get the apocalyptic theme way too much. I think we don't give ourselves credit as human beings. We can be civilized. And we just underestimate the fact that we're not fighting each other all the time. So why should it all end in an apocalypse? You know, it has to be like all the smart people died during the apocalypse or something. So I wanted them to see that there's life after that. Because when we think World War III, the first thing we say, oh, this is the end. It's the end of the world. You know, it's not the fact. It's just the beginning of a new era.
So you talk about the really, you know, experiencing this journey with these characters and their journey as well. So you have to have a big vision for this. If you had to like prepare, like to kind of like give a scope for how this world is building, what would you say?
You're going to be surprised. I mean, when we got into it, we were just bikers, so a lot of people think that it's just about bikes. And they'll see there's so many spin-offs to this universe. I mean, we've created a whole fictional universe around this storyline. So it kind of shows you what the world could be if everybody used common sense. So, you know, in this world, politicians, popular figures, they're held accountable for their actions. They just can't do things that hurt others and they're not the consequences. So you see what it's like to watch countries and nations actually answer to the people instead of the government.
I like it. So you guys are one issue deep right now. And I would imagine that this is building for something huge. How big is the and where are you guys going to go? What are you guys building to now? Does it evolve into, you know, this like all these exploration of like different portions of your universe?
Yes. In fact, you'll see it during the growing process. Like I said, our saying is an ordinary to legendary. And you will watch these young street racers, these kids, go from bike racing to navigating politics to becoming superheroes themselves, leaders of the Deadly Seven, the Guard Party of the Masterson. When issue one first opens up, we give you a glimpse right in the first couple of pages of what was behind us and what's to come, because it starts off in 2029 in the future, and Nuri is obviously about to fight a great battle, one that seems it will cost him his life. So he's having a Jesus moment, a Garden of Gethsemane moment, where it's like, okay, everything has been leading to this. And then right as you start to go into that, it flashes back. It starts as young Nuri, and you see how they got to that point. And then it finishes at the end of the issue with him going into battle, which is a cliffhanger. So you don't see, you just know he's on his way to a fight. And then issue two picks up, and you're seeing how the story develops. How these characters became who they are.
I love that way of like storytelling.
And me too. I wanted it to grip the people. I wanted them to be able to relate to it. So like there are a lot of things in there. Like when we do some of our moon designs, like you see like on that poster right there, see how it's a real moon? Because our theme is, you know, art imitates life. Art imitates real life. So we wanted to make the feel of the comic book dark, gritty, and real so that our fans could relate to it.
So one thing that we have really been talking about, and I love the art, by the way.
Thank you.
I think the art is one of the biggest things that drew me to the table in the first place. I love the concept that you guys are building here. But one of the things that our show does as we embrace also is we embrace, you know, breaking stigmas and around depression and creating conversation about hope for those that are struggling with suicide. And one of the biggest things that I've been trying to ask creators like yourself that we've been interviewing for this is, why do you think that there is a stigma around depression and suicide to begin with?
Really big topics, suicide, PTSD. In fact, things brought up, because we touch on these things. We deal with autism. You'll be surprised to spit people on autism.
Nice.
I don't want to give too much away, but people will see autistic humans in a completely different light than what we've looked at. You will see them do great things, and when you see the great things that they do, you're like, they weren't autistic. We just didn't understand. They've been talking to us all along. And one thing we dive into that will help with suicide prevention and PTSD is our initial spinoff, which is Ghost Races. That covers the first Chronicle book. All right? Like I said, everything we do has a story, a meaning behind it. And what happens is the Ghost Races covers the story of Nuri Montes' father during his military time. And basically, his dad is part of he leads a special forces unit called the Ghost Razors, who use only tribal weaponry to do battle. Edge weapons, that's it. So picture taking an ancient tribal ways from like African tribes, Hawaiian tribes, and then bringing it up to date with high-tech razor weapons. And you get like five different versions of the prep. So that is where it all really starts. And her dad and my dad were both Vietnam vets. And my dad passed in 2004. Okay, but he's in the story. Her dad passed in August. So I had to speed up production because he was terminally ill with cancer. And I needed him to see his legacy and it before he passed. So I got it done. He saw it before he passed. So even though they're gone, their stories will be told and they'll live on forever.
So where can people find you guys online, and where can people follow the unfolding of this massive universe?
You can follow us at burningspiritcomics.com. That's Burning Spirit Comics with an X. burningspiritcomics.com. It will lead you to all the other avenues to reach us. We're also on Facebook. You can get our Facebook page, Off-Guard Chronicles. We're also on Instagram, Burning Spirit LLC. And just come check us out, man, because it's the fans who make it all work, because the characters in the story come from among the fans.